You're listening to A Conduit's Diary. This is a podcast about me, Rachel, and my experiences as I investigate paranormal activity as a conduit. This is rated R for explicit because I do have a little bit of a foul mouth. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to it. It's crazy to think that we're already on episode 36, Suffer in Silence. Petunia was lounging on the small porch in the even smaller backyard of my townhome. I was lucky she was such a lazy dog. Any other dog wouldn't have tolerated the lack of space to run about. She accepted our short walks when it wasn't an inferno outside, though she wasn't a fan of going more than a block or two. She hated dog parks. She didn't like playdates. She seemed to enjoy when I fostered kittens, which was starting to taper off as kitten season came to an end. It would ramp up again in the fall. For now, I had 2 6-week-old kittens, one of which was curled up next to her, enjoying the early morning sun. Life had, for the most part, slowed down. Kitten season was insane at the rescue, and thanks to the sudden TikTok fame we had, and Haley's endorsement of us, we weren't lacking fosters. One of the girls wanted to reach out to social media influencers and encourage them to foster pets as a way to spread the word even more. It seemed like a great idea. Other than this podcast and my sorry excuse for a Twitter presence, I was of no use. I didn't even recognize Haley when I first went to her house, and every time one of the assistants or workers showed me some famous internet animal, I was clueless. Hema, at least, had social media savvy. She was sitting at my island / kitchen table / workspace, tapping away on her laptop. I don't know why she traded her spacious, beautiful home for my tiny one, but she claimed she liked the energy. She had the other 6-week-old kitten on her lap, stroking it mindlessly as she scrolled and tapped. "How's your mom?" she asked. Ever since our little hike, she tried to restart the conversation a few times. It usually went nowhere. "Oh, same old, same old. I guess she's been giving her in-home nurse tarot readings." "I didn't know she did tarot," Hema said, her head jerking up. I shrugged. She picked up a lot of things over the last few years. She tried runes. She said it doesn't speak to our heritage. "What is your heritage?" Hema asked with a frown. "I don't know, a particular pale version of vanilla?" Hema laughed and shook her head. "Well, maybe knowing about, like a little bit more about where you came from may help you narrow down how it all started." There it was again, the origin of what we were. I know Hema spent much of her earlier years trying to figure out her origin story. She was in her late teens the first time she screamed and passed out to predict the death of a family member at a family reunion. It was unsettling and, thankfully, didn't happen very often. She scoured family history, accused her parents of adopting her and lying. It was a whole thing. "I'm sure my mother will tell me when she's ready," I lied. Hema gave me a withering look that told me just how believable that was for her. I agreed. I was sure she'd take her secret to the grave, and the grave wasn't far off. I was saved from the conversation by a ring at my doorbell. Petunia, ever the guard dog, barely lifted her head from her spot in the sun to appraise the door. The kitten at her side had the sense to get up and stretch, lazily wandering over to the door and chirping all the while. I opened the door and, to my surprise, saw Stephanie standing there. "What are you doing here?" I asked. She sighed and crossed her arms over her chest. "Wow, glad to see you too, little sis. It's been a while." "That's not what I meant," I countered. She raised an eyebrow high enough for it to be visible from behind her obnoxiously large sunglasses. I'd seen less and less of her lately, which hurt a little since we'd been in the process of repairing our fractured relationship. I had a feeling it had to do with her new boyfriend, Stu. He was another real estate agent and seemed pretty slimy, at least by the billboards of him through town. He drove a Ferrari with ridiculous decals on it advertising his business. Gross. "Hey, Stephanie," called Hema from the kitchen. Stephanie poked her head around the corner, pushing past me to enter the living room. "Hema, hey, long time no see," she said, and gave Emma an awkward hug. There was a terse silence as I regarded my sister. "Just tell me," I said with a sigh. "You make it seem like the only time I talk to you is when I want something," she complained. "Because you do. I am willing to be bought." "Good, because this one is worth it." Stephanie dug through her obscenely large purse and extracted her iPad. She was tapping quickly, endlessly on the screen until she found the page she wanted. She scoured the small space for a place to set up her iPad. Finding none, she sighed and collapsed onto my couch, frowning as she sunk nearly to the floor. "How old is this thing?" she asked. I rolled my eyes and sat across from her on an equally old recliner. "It can legally drink. Come on, what's so worth impeding on my day off?" "This," Stephanie said, turning her iPad to show an MLS listing. Hema leaned forward, whistling low as she read off the details. "Whew, 5-bedroom, 4-bathroom, 3,500 square foot home in Gilbert for..." "Does that really say 500,000? She nearly squealed at the price. "Custom home in Circle G," Stephanie clarified. "That's unheard of," I said. I didn't know much about real estate, but I wasn't blind. I'd seen the tiny townhouse home on my block selling for $300,000 plus. The idea of something 4 times the size of my home selling for barely double was insane. And Circle G was beautiful. It was a swatch of custom homes that looked more like palatial estates than actual houses. "What's the catch?" Hema asked. "It's haunted as shit," Stephanie said with glee. "Like, for real haunted and not just some dude living in the walls?" I asked, referencing one of the last times Stephanie and I worked together. She shook her head. "No, it's haunted, haunted. I've already scoped it out and it's eerie." She flipped the iPad back around and started to scroll and read. "Built in 2001, owned for 10 years before it was sold in 2011. Sold again in 2015. Then 3 times in 2016, 4 times in 2017. You get the drift. It's been sitting empty for the last year and a half." "In this market?" Hema asked. The stars in her eyes were undeniable as she leaned forward. "You want to leave Arcadia and your plant palace for this?" I asked. "I'd be crazy not to. That place and Gilbert? We can't afford Gilbert, but we could make that work." She trailed off, considering. "Well, I'm going to up the price after I buy it and fix it," Stephanie said. "Fix it?" I asked. Stephanie shrugged. "It's dated, mostly because no one stayed long enough to finish their work. There's half-completed constructions from multiple families. The style from 2001 is way different from 2016, which is not as modern as 2022. "Why did the construction stop?" asked Hema, leaning forward and putting her chin on her fist. "The owners move, usually. I couldn't find great details about why they were moving or if the construction crews were chased out. My best lead is the current owner who, well, it took a few drinks to get the real estate agent to talk." Stephanie said this with a wink. Stephanie was really pretty. Her hair was auburn and wavy. She spent a lot of money to look like she was closer to 20 than 40. And her obsession with marathons kept her lean. I didn't doubt she could charm a man out of some secrets. "Don't give me that judgmental look," she hissed at me. I shook my head. "No, it's not. I'm just curious what's so bad for it to change hands so quickly. Isn't it, like, hard to get loans and stuff for homes?" Stephanie shrugged. "People who live in these homes aren't especially tight on money. Anyway, he spilled the tea. It's pretty piping. You know how some hauntings warm up after a while, almost like it takes the ghost some time to realize someone is in their home? Not this one. There were reports of activity during the open house." She sounded right up scandalized by it, shaking her head. This one open house, the chandelier nearly fell on a group of people walking through the foyer. They had to stop staging the house because glasses would go flying or pillows would literally fly through the air and hit people. It was wild. The real estate agent said he didn't believe it at first, and then, well, he saw it for himself. He said he was lighting a candle and making some cookies in the oven when the candle flew across the room and nearly started a fire. He had to move a plant to cover up the burn mark in the carpet. Carpet? It is dated, Hema interjected. Stephanie raised her hands. Right? That's what I mean. With a little exorcism and some elbow grease, this is a multi-million dollar home. An exorcism? I echoed. Well, yeah, it's like a demon, right? It's scaring people away and being all evil and shit. I sighed and rolled my eyes. What is it with people and demons? Do they not exist? Stephanie asked, genuinely curious. It was unusual to hear her so interested in this part of my life. I hesitated, taken aback. They do, they just don't trouble themselves with haunting houses. I guess if one was trapped there, but they would invite people in. They'd want access to them to make them deals or feed off their fear or make them... I stopped suddenly at the look of horror on Hema and Stephanie's face. What? Did you think the movies and books were misrepresenting poor old demons? If you think there's a demon, you should run. I almost added, trust me, but I knew better. I snapped my mouth shut and waved Stephanie on to continue. So the people who live there, they said it was like instant? Whatever it is, it's very aggressive. Loud music in the night, running bathwater so it overflows. Starting on like night one. Most families don't last more than a few days before they've booked a hotel. Has anyone ever been hurt? I asked. Stephanie considered. I don't think so. I was able to find a few reports of police being called, investigating for a break-in or something. The real estate agent also had pages of receipts and invoices from exterminators, contractors, people who investigated everything from air conditioning to the crawl space. I didn't see any signs of anyone being injured, but that's not as easy to find. The realtor didn't mention any injuries that I recall. She tapped her chin. I was a little drunk, though, she said with a conspiratorial wink. Okay, so the ghost, it like traumatizes these people from the get-go, throws things around, floods their bathroom. Why? Asked Hema. That's the eternal question, I said, standing and straightening my sweatpants. So that's what you're going to do. You're going to go there and see what it wants? Pretty much. Any history of deaths or serious police reports? What about previous owners? I asked Stephanie. She shook her head. Nothing before 2015, really. It seems like when it was sold in the late 2015, the trouble really started. Couldn't find anything about the previous owners, just what they paid and what it sold for. The realtor didn't have that information, and I came up with blanks with online databases. It's not uncommon. Rich people are good at covering things up, especially if they were famous, like a sports star that had a second home and didn't want fans showing up. In Gilbert? Hema laughed. You'd be surprised. South Chandler is a haven for football players and baseball players. They're basically snowbirds since there are so many spring training places here. Anyway, they like to cover their tracks. I've heard awful things about that dude that's dating Kylie Jenner and fans trying to find him. I had no idea who that was, but I nodded along as if I did. So, want to take a drive? Stephanie asked. Hema closed her laptop and stood up quickly. Oh, hell yeah. If you're okay with it, she added quickly. I sighed and ran my hands through my hair. Let me change. I want a cut of the sale, and I need caffeine on the way. Give me 10%? 10%? You're insane. I don't even get that for a commission. I'll give you a flat rate like all your other clients do. She followed it up with a decent number that made even Hema blink. And I'll buy you a new couch. Not an IKEA one either. A real one. Within the hour, we'd pulled into Circle G. Hema was practically buzzing, rocking in her chair as we drove through the neighborhood. It was one of those neighborhoods where all the homes were custom, but still managed to look identical. It wasn't my style. I was still secretly holding out for the day I could move to Alaska or somewhere equally cold and live in a cabin. The monotone beige yards with rocks and equally bland cacti was not my thing. Here we are, Stephanie said, pulling up to the home. It needed a new coat of paint, and the weeds in the yard were probably the cause of some serious conversations with the local HOA. But otherwise, it was pretty cute. The driveway led to a 3-car garage. Around the side of it was a covered front porch with a gate and a little water fountain, which was currently dried and filled with weeds. I counted 4 dead birds in the front yard. "Is that a bad sign?" Hema asked, pointing to them. "You tell me. You're the witch," I countered. She rolled her eyes. "I'm a scientific witch. I don't believe in all that superstitious stuff." "I see ghosts, and you literally predict death. Please tell me you're kidding." Her mouth made a thin line, and she grunted her disapproval. Stephanie unlocked the door and led us into a large foyer. I looked up, and sure enough, wires dangled from the ceiling where a light fixture once was. Stephanie and Hema broke away to walk through the home, pointing out the bones of the house or some shit. They were marveling at the partially demolished fireplace and gutted kitchen, when movement from down the hallway caught my eye. The house was warm, the air conditioning clearly off. The ceiling fans overhead only did so much to circulate the stuffy air. I fanned myself and tossed my hair into a ponytail before heading down the dark hallway. I flipped a light switch, annoyed to find it didn't work. Really? 2001 electricity was this unreliable? With a sigh, I walked down the long hallway, peering into room after room. The home did have potential. It was no wonder so many people bought and sold it over the years. One room even had a ghost of what was once a nursery, with a baby's name stenciled into the wall around elephant paper. The movement came again at the end of the hall, disappearing into the largest room. I wandered to the double doors, one of which was partially open. When I pushed the door fully open, I was greeted by an empty master bedroom the size of my townhome. I didn't have much time to explore, though, because the woman huddled in the corner caught my full attention. At first, I couldn't see her features. She was sitting in the corner, her knees to her chest, her forehead against her knees. Her long blonde hair fell over her knees and hid her face. "Hello?" I asked. She raised her head, her eyes narrowing. Her face was wet with tears, her eyes swollen. "Ugh, another one comes. Another one who can't hear me, who runs from my warnings," she said. Her accent was thick. Eastern European, maybe? She was young and strikingly beautiful. She stood and started to pace, running her hands through her hair. "What should I throw today, Perhaps I can find a scrap of paper somewhere. They have taken my weapons, my words." "Are you okay?" I asked. The woman stopped her pacing, her eyes widening with shock. Slowly, ever so slowly, she pivoted to look at me. "You can see me?" she asked. Her voice was a whisper, shocked. I didn't miss the look of hope in those wide blue eyes. It hurt to stare at him. "And hear you," I added. Oh my God, she said, her hands going to her chest. If she wasn't already dead, I'd have worried she'd had a heart attack. Her chest heaved as she went down on her knees. Despite myself, I dropped down next to her, as if to help her up. It was a reflex. I knew if I tried to touch her, my hand would move right through her. "What's your name?" I asked. "Jessica," she said, swallowing. "Hi, Jessica, I'm Rachel. Do you need a minute?" I asked. She shook her head, suddenly steeling herself. "No, I've had too many minutes trapped here." "Trapped?" I asked. She spread her arms wide. "I watch people come and go, and they try to rebuild my home, try to renovate it. I try to warn them, to tell them I'm here. No one can see me. I'm invisible. And when I try to run, when I try to leave," she trailed off. I can't leave here." I'd heard this from before, from hauntings, from unwilling ghosts. Some people may call it unfinished business or divine purpose, a reason they stay around like a guardian angel or hauntings. Jessica clearly had something she needed to do that kept her from leaving. "At first, I was trying to warn people, to warn her." "Who?" I asked, trying to make sense of her rambling story. "My husband. Ex-husband. After he killed me, he brought another woman here. At first, I didn't know how to tell him I was here. I would scream at him and he didn't so much as flinch. In time, I figured out how to grab things, how to throw them. It was small things at first, and at first I could just push them off the counter. I could destroy his coffee every morning. With time, I wrote my name in the sugar I spilled on the counter. He is a spineless man, and he brought a woman into our home. I scared him out. At first, I wanted to warn the others. He is bad. He is evil. Go away. Run from him. But he left and never came back, and I was stuck here. She laughed bitterly and spread her arms to the area again. Cursed to watch people come and go, to see them tear up my home. I try to get their attention, but no one can see me. Not until now. What is it you need to say? I asked her. She didn't hesitate. My husband murdered me and buried me in the dirt under the pool. I don't know if he planned it, if he dug the hole and they were coming the next day to fill it in. We'd been fighting about, I don't even remember now. He's a bad man. He lied to me when he married me and brought me here. He said he'd pay for me to go to school, that I could have a job and a career. Instead, he moved me to this awful country and locked me in this house. He told me we needed two children first, and then he'd think about letting me go to school. She laughed bitterly again. He gave me a year before he gave up. We fought. He shot me. He dragged my body outside and buried me. My only solace is that he is fat and out of shape, and it took him hours to dig the hole. Holy shit, I said, because I didn't know what else to say. Come, she said, moving to the door against the wall that led outside. I followed her out, fumbling with the rusty key to open the door to the yard. It was in similar disrepair as the rest of the place, but it had a lot of potential. The pool was empty, with a swamp-like puddle that looked like the breeding ground for mosquitoes. She scoffed angrily. Of course they let this place decay. Good. I am buried here, she said, pointing to the lowest point. Now, you will help me, Rachel, who can see me, or you will continue to stare at me like some idiot? Harry answered on the third ring. He groaned and made some comment about how I never did anything at a reasonable hour or on a reasonable day. Despite his groans, he was there with a crew in less than an hour. Stephanie looked annoyed, her arms crossed over her chest as they destroyed the pool. Under the pool, she said. That's awful, Hema agreed, though clearly to a different point. Stephanie and Hema had somehow found the man responsible for Jessica's death. Through a series of searches that would make the FBI jealous, they narrowed down on a couple married in 1998, Jessica and Dean. Jessica was from Ukraine and married Dean 2 months after she moved here. Jessica was never reported missing. They filed for divorce in 2016. Harry claimed they'd been able to subpoena the records and prove the signature was forged. I'm not sure how he knew that, but he was closer to the law than I was. We watched through the late morning into the afternoon as the pool was destroyed and the digging began. It didn't take more than a few hours before the first sign of her body was found, a skeletal finger pointing up through the dirt, pointing at the sky as if in accusation. Thank you, Rachel, who can see me, said Jessica from my left. She was watching her own body being dug up with a grim look on her face. Plenty of opportunity, my ass, she said. With one final glare, she spat into the undamaged part of the pool and disappeared. A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro, created by Chris Hornberger.